Hello, listener. Before we go into this week's episode, which I think is an absolute cracker, I just wanted to say thank you to a couple of people, to all the new people who are supporting us on Patreon and Ko-fi. Jack Langley, he edited his pledge up to $5 a month, so he'll be getting some video content, extra podcast, that kind of stuff. And Dave Cooper on Ko-fi donated a very, very generous amount, which has actually allowed us to update all of our stuff. We had to shut everything down, basically, when we stopped podcasting for a few months. We had to shut down our podcast host and Dropbox and all that kind of stuff. And that pledge from him has actually meant we've managed to be able to put all those back on and run the podcast as it was. So we're really back going. I'm enjoying myself. It's good to have Panks back, and hopefully you enjoy this episode. I really enjoyed it. Sorry Panks couldn't be here for this little message. These happened after we recorded a couple of days ago. So thank you so much. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you soon.
It's episode 157, or if you're calling this season 2, episode 2. What are you calling it? My good friend up there in deepest, darkest East Anglia, Justin Panks. What are you calling
2.0.
it? 2.0. 2.0.
It's like computers talk.
Yeah, yeah, but you... So what are you calling this episode, though? 2.0?
Oh, no, I'm saying this is the Pranks and Firth podcast version 2.0.2. Yep. 2.0.2.
So this is 2.2?
2.2. But we ask that... No. That... No. Because that would mean in 8 episodes we'd have to call it 3, but 3 will be season 3. So it's 2.0.2.
Oh, couldn't it be 2 point... Can't you go like 2.13?
2.02. No, you can't get 2.13. Yeah. Decimal, man.
Yeah, but I'm saying like you could have season 2, episode 13.
Why don't you just listen to me and just say this is 2.02, and then the next one's 2.03.
So the last one that we did...
was 2.01.
Was it, though? Or was it...
Well, no.
Like, episode 156.
I wasn't prepared for this conversation, Ash. I feel like it's a pop quiz. You've sprung it on me somewhat. And then...
Yeah, you're sort of acting
dissatisfied with my answer, which I'm making up...
I'm not dissatisfied. I'm curious as to where we are.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Who's that now? Who's that
it's
now?
It's the old boy again. Remember him? The old man. Yeah, comes sit on my knee. The one that talks nice, and then all of a sudden he'll say something like, I want to look in your eyes as you choke down my seed. He just says things like that. It was all fine in my day, of course. There was none of this political correctness or whatnot and stuff. It's nice to just tell a man that you want to fill his belly up with your dirty nut mustard. What's wrong with that?
Oh, dear. Has he got Alzheimer's or is he...
Yeah, well, it's an early sign of dementia. It's saying inappropriate things. It's my get-out clause. I can say what I fucking like, mate.
How old are you?
27. But an old money. You know, that used to be. When we had a telephone table in the hallway, who remembers that? Can of that gold air spray. You know the one I mean, with a gold tin of air spray. Everybody had the same stuff back then. Actually, we didn't have none of this choice. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. I don't know.
Why was there no choice back then?
It's austere times. Very austere.
What are we... Austere. When are we talking about?
1997. As far back as that. Spice Girls, you know.
22 years ago.
I remember lots of things, but I don't see the comedic merit in pointing them out. Unlike some comedians I could mention.
Oh, well, it's a big thing, isn't it, remembering stuff?
Yeah, it can be. It can be.
Get some really big laughs by remembering a thing and other people going, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that as well. And you go, oh, aren't we on the, ooh, the same, aren't we, Rick?
Making it funny is quite difficult, though.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, it's impossible, in my opinion, because...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But where do the laughs come from? We're talking like
Recognition.
Peter Kay,
Recognition. We're talking Peter Kay. Mate bubble bath. Your mum would swish around round and mate bubble bath.
Yeah, so where is the humour in that?
It's a shared experience, isn't it?
But where's the humour? Because like that, his bit about Panda Cola, she's come back with Roller Cola.
It worked Roller Cola.
It weren't Coca-Cola, it was Roller Cola. So where's the humour?
It's like, it's a trick. That's like a pun isn't really funny, is it? It's more like you laugh because of the mix. No.
A pun, at least I can pull it apart and say what the joke is. It's saying it's like this thing, but it's not that thing.
Yeah, but it's more about, I think it's more about human beings, as I think we alluded to last week, like to look for order in the chaos. And I think a pun is order in chaos, isn't it? And it's
I don't want to get away from reminiscing comedy.
No, I'm not. So what I'm saying is, with a pun, it's like you get it, you get the mechanics and you get what they're doing and you understand it, like solving an equation.
It's laid out for you, isn't it, a pun? It's no hard
no,
work,
you
there's no,
no
heavy
but you
lifting.
Feel, it's a trick. You feel like you are solving an equation that a comedian is putting out there and you understand.
Yeah.
It's
literally a two-piece jigsaw, yeah. Put it together.
And it's like the comedian, you know, like in maths at school, they just say you need to show you're working out. I think with a pun, you hear it and you see the workings out that the comedian did and you sort of laugh and you go, oh, yeah, I get that. And I think with love, yeah. And I think you get a dopamine hit of because I think as human beings we are evolved to bond in our tribe. So I think it's a bonding thing. And what is more bonding than someone saying something that you have also remember of an experience from your past and go?
So here's the thing though: you go to a comedy night to do a set. If it's going badly,
never.
Sometimes
I'm
they'll
to
go.
That.
Oh, they just wanted gags.
Yeah,
they just wanted gags. And what they mean by gags is they wanted puns.
Yeah,
really, and one-liners.
Yeah.
Well, I've never had a bad comedy gig where I've done gags and one-liners, and they've gone, well, what they want is long-form stories.
Edinburgh, my friend.
Yeah, awful, awful.
Or
place.
What the f- can we talk about Edinburgh? Because I think I definitely think that. Well, everyone I spoke to, I didn't go this year.
Bad times from everyone, as far as I can work out.
I think that they have priced out the punters, for one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to go up there for, I mean, it's quite reasonable that someone might go up there for 2-3 days as a punter, maybe longer.
Yes.
And you're paying extortionate accommodation costs.
If you're going up as someone to go and watch comedy,
yes.
I don't know where you're staying.
I don't know. You're in a hostel. You're spending a hostel for £100 a night.
It's so expensive. It completely takes away from what it was.
Everyone I've spoken to.
As you're saying, most people I heard this year didn't have a good time.
Not just performers, but the performers said it was a slog, but also saying just looking around the streets aren't as busy. The thing is, it's a month-long biggest arts festival in the world. The pricing is getting so much now that to go up there for the entire month, if it's not your job, if you're not in the industry, that's impossible, unless you're like a millionaire, and that's not even exaggerating. I mean, you could go on a...
You're talking the megastar comedians.
No, I'm talking about civilians, actually. I'm saying if you wanted to go up there for a month, if you were like, I'm a big arts fan... I'm going to take, say you was a teacher, so you have your 6 weeks holiday, so it's feasible time-wise to go up there to go for the entire month to watch. Just say that's what you wanted to do. You now could not afford to do that. Or you would look at it and go, I could go and watch a mixed bag of some good, some bad comedy for a month, or I could go on like a luxury cruise for a month for less money. What should I do? So anyway, people are saying that the shows were a slog. The city in general during the month of August looked less busy, not just less numbers in the shows, but there weren't as many people milling. I think everyone's over it. I think it's dead. And I think, and I would say this because I'm a twat, but I do think that the industry again has displayed how out of touch with the common person it is in terms of the acts that are put on the larger platforms, pushed, the ones that get the...
But are they disconnected or are people interested in those acts?
Well, this is what I've always said. I've said this before and I shall and will say it again. Live at the Apollo used to be Friday night BBC One. I think it's now buried Thursday night BBC Two, since there seemed to be a distinct change in the booking policy, and rather than booking established huge acts at the top of the game, it became more of a platform or a springboard from which the industry would like to launch talent
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. Because the TV shows are booked by the big agencies.
Yeah, and, yeah, like, but instead of going, these are our best jewel in our crown acts, they're like, these are the sort of people you haven't heard of that we'd like to be big acts. And I think they were just throwing...
Very much so.
I don't mean this in as disparaging as it is to use this analogy, but kind of do. They were just slinging shit at the wall and seeing what would stick, rather than proven acts.
That's right.
Rather than proven acts going on the highest platform, they're now using panel shows and the big platforms to go... Well, fuck it. Give this bloke 15 minutes and see if everyone likes it. And then if they don't, they sort of sink without a trace. And I think
that's very true.
But also, that's one strand of Edinburgh in like the big acts, like the big agencies will sign someone who's young and got the look, if you like. God, I sound old. Someone that's young and got the look, and you know, and they will put them in one of the big four venues, charge them extortionate amount of money. I mean,
yeah, the act is being ripped off as
well. The act is being rumped by everyone,
and to the tunes of tens of thousands.
Yeah,
like, and I'm talking middle. I spoke to someone that does a lot of writing now, but was probably a middle position act maybe 5-10 years ago, and he said that he was basically forced to go up to Edinburgh and then was saddled with a 20 grand debt.
Yep. It's common. See, now people listen.
From a month in Edinburgh that he then has to pay back to his agency by doing every gig that they tell him to do.
Do you think in society there is a bigger discrepancy between what someone on the outside thinks our job is like in terms of monetary remuneration and the reality? Because have you ever done like a weekend club and someone's asked like some coked up city boys asked you how much you've got for doing your job?
Oh, constantly. That happens so often, yeah. Being asked how much I earn.
Well, once I was honest and this guy was all with his mates and they was all going, that was really funny. I opened a big club, an established big club in London with a 20-minute set. One that, you know, people have heard of, like, a big club.
In
the bar, and he was with his mates and I think he was showing off, and he was a lift engineer, and he goes, what'd you get for that then? And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to tell him. And all of them just looked at me, their faces dropped, and they were like, oh, like, how can there be 400 people in this room laughing, whooping, applauding, giving me all that adulation
and
attention,
$4,000.
And they think you're earning thousands, and you tell them it's basically like what a plumber would get for a call out, and he was just like, they just walked off, they'd lost all respect for me, and rightly so. I feel better that way. I'm more comfortable with that, to be honest.
I think that we do it right, myself and you, I'm talking about, because quite early on, I think you as well, put a value on your time and effort, really.
Which mine is still, my calibration is still based within the fact I used to be a roofer.
Yes.
So that my own detriment.
We both come from manual worker.
So, but sometimes now I look back, maybe to my own detriment, because someone would say, "Will you come X amount of miles away from your home for Y amount of pounds?" And it's probably not quite enough. But I think, fucking hell, that's like what I used to earn in a day being a roofer, and it's like way easier than that. So maybe I just need to start recalibrating the value I put on my time. Because I think I do lowball or have a lower expectation because my life used to be so dreary and difficult.
But I do think, like you're saying that in a negative way, I do think that you will go, well, that's the kind of money I earned in a day doing my other job. But I think there's so many people, I've got so many, I was going to say friends, but you
it's
know,
not overstated.
Yeah, I've got so many acquaintances that will go everywhere, all over the place for next to no money. Mm. Whereas, you know, I would say, make a reasonable amount because we go, well, I'm not going there for that, but I will go there for that.
But then again, that must change. And there has to come a point incrementally along your career as A, you get better, B, possibly in more demand, that you have to go, do you know what, 6 months I would have done that, but... I mean, I've got better at asking for more. There's been 3 examples this year where someone said, will you come and do this for this much money? And I've gone, is that the most you can go? Because that's not quite enough for a weekend. And they've chucked on an extra, you know, they've chucked on top of that my fuel money, which makes a difference.
Oh, it makes a massive difference.
Massive difference.
But saying no, I would say to acts that are making that change from the open spots to paid spots, I would say saying no is massively important.
Mm.
Like being in a position to go, no, I can't do it for that. Sorry.
And if you are a new act, if you're a newer act, the converse, contrary advice I would give you, which is also true, depends where you are, is say yes to everything. I mean, if you're not getting
when you're
paid,
starting out, you have to know. You have to be very realistic with your ability on and your position on a bill. Yeah. I think that's another thing as well. You have to know. You have to think about, where am I placed on this bill? What is the value of me doing
this? What am I bringing to
gig?
The table? Doing comedy isn't just about what are you getting out of it. It's not about what am I what am I getting out of this gig in terms of the fee, the exposure, the potential for more work. Yeah, you have to factor in. But also, look at yourself. What am I bringing to it? Am I going on in the middle and the other acts are carrying me and I'm kind of getting away with it because the night is a good... Or am I coming and adding value to this lineup? And if the answer's...
Like, one of the best bits of advice I ever had was from Marcus Birdman.
Join a gym.
Cheers, mate. Marcus Birdman said to me, when we were coming back from a gig, he said, there was four or five acts on the bill. Where do you place yourself on that bill tonight? And I was like, I think I was like, I put myself fourth. And he went, yeah, you were fourth. But he said, you want to be aiming for each, as you go along, each person on that bill should be looking at you going, oh shit, he deserved my money tonight.
No, yeah, I remember when I started doing like smaller gigs, I started to do as well, if not better than the closer when I was in the middle.
Yeah.
And then people go... And then closers would go, oh, yeah, well, it's because you're in the middle. It's easier. If I was in the middle spot, I'd rip it. And then, for example, 3 weeks ago, I got to a gig and I thought I was in the middle. It's one of those gigs where you sort of get the same money. It's like the opener, middle and close. It's not like a stacked...
Big disparity.
No, it's not like a...
A weekend club, people might not know that. But a weekend club, your opener and closer will get... So your closer will get the most money... Maybe your MC will get the second most and your opener will get the third most, but they will be on much more than...
Yeah. But then there's another business model where like a lot of clubs are doing now where they'll have three acts on similar money. Covent Garden's like that, for example. So they have a really...
Yeah, they just have three, let's say, headliners.
They have four headliners because I think like most of the MCs they book could close. So that...
Well, I was booked to do it, but I had to pull out.
Okay, you used the pull-out method. So I thought I was on in the middle, but I was actually on closing. And it was the one where I was ill. I told you I was really ill. Now, if I was on in the middle, I would have phoned it in and probably not performed that. My performance would have been comparable to how I was feeling. But
cranked it down.
Because I would have just been a bit more like, oh, I'm in the middle. But because I was closing and what Marcus told you, I felt that pressure. It's like, not just internally within the green room, like which one of these acts deserve to close. It's like, this audience have got babysitters. I've got to finish this show on a high for them. They deserve it. So I went up and I really blustered through using smoke and mirrors and false enthusiasm.
It's funny, isn't it? You can make a gig better by your performance rather than your material. So you could do the same material, but you've definitely got gears to get through 100. That material as a closer.
Yeah, but I think that I don't, but personally I book gigs. Now, I do like deadpan. I do like, like laconic, laid back comedians. I like that sort of comedy where you have to go to them, like a Stephen Wright, like one of my favourites. But I would rather pick what I would say a more energetic act with inferior material to a brilliant, brilliant writer whose shtick or persona is laid back and deadpan. I don't like to close the night on a...
No. You want the audience leaving a little bit tired.
You want them you want them to feel energised, you know, like Phil Nickel or someone. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want it so that when, you know, like when they leave, they're just like, what the fuck was that? So they don't really... their head's still spinning until they're halfway home sort of thing. I like a whirlwind to close shows.
I couldn't do that. I can never, ever... be there. Like, I could definitely up and down the gears, but like you were saying, Phil Nickel, someone like that, someone like Terry Alderton, which is a bit different because he goes very surreal, but that kind of thing where they are gone, You know what I mean? They're doing all sorts of weird stuff. Like Terry Alderton
frenetic.
Said to me once, oh, look.
Frenetic.
He said, you should. There's a stack of chairs at the side of the stage. He went, oh, you should have been climbing on there. Like, oh, I'm King Kong. It's like, why would I do that? I can't. I'm not that comedian. No, I'll never be that comedian.
That's not bad advice, but I don't think he's. I think what he's actually saying is, I would have been climbing on there, Senna.
Yes.
But you can't tell someone. You know, you can't say to fucking. You know, a high. You wouldn't say to Jimmy Carr. Oh, you should have been climbing on those chairs, pretend to be King Kong, because he's not a clown. He's a dry, sardonic, rapier. Like, well, if you like him or not, but his jokes are efficient, and he's got a very high status, reserved, aloof persona, which would be blown wide open if he. That's like I always had this thing where if an act ever. This is just personal, and some people can do this, but this is a sort of similar example, but maybe coming from the other side of the coin. If an act ever. And, you know, ever lays on the floor and part of a joke or falls down or kneels down, I hate it. I've said to friends of mine, like, don't fucking lay on the floor. Don't. I hate it.
I think I've once...
been tackled to the ground by someone from Sesame Street.
That is
but that
true,
wasn't a choice, was it?
I once did a thing where I talked about fainting.
Yeah.
And I went... down slightly, and exactly what you're saying. I've never thought about it a lot, but I've never really processed it. I felt so wrong.
It just looks so needy, desperate. It's almost like you're throwing yourself, literally throwing yourself at the audience's feet for approval. And it looks like you're trying.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had a bit where I said I fainted, I'd probably like bend over and put one hand on my knee and look like. But like where. Honestly, yeah. As soon as someone lays on the floor, I've just lost respect for him. I just think, oh, you clown. But then Terry's got a bit about it where he goes on his back and does his feet talking to each other.
Yeah, no, he's different, though, because he is that
exactly.
clown.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It's probably similar advice. I'm probably saying the same thing, but different. Like, what is he saying?
But then I even get a bit funny when I do a weird... Like, I have to sort of legs stretched apart, turning from knee to knee, as if, like... I can't even describe what I'm doing, but just kind of a leg movement to show movement. And even in that bit, I go, oh, that's a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to it. I can't remember who it was. I was listening to a podcast, American comedians, and they were calling things like that dance moves. And they were going, you know...
It is a bit of a dance move.
Yeah, but what they meant was it was like that is you kind of tricking the audience that they're seeing something good when they're not. It's almost like a... you know, like in the animal kingdom, like a cat will like raise its
flare.
A cat will raise flaring. Its fur up to appear larger, so you think it's a much more formidable beast.
Yeah.
But once you know what it's doing, it's not. It's just a skinny little cat with its hair standing up, and it's almost like it's smoke and mirrors, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
No, a good friend.
Yeah.
I've got a good friend who did a bit where he fell on the floor during a bit, and it made sense in the storytelling of the story because. But it was. I said to him, like he actually laid down on his back, and then you have to get up, and you look so sort of like.
Yeah.
It's the getting up again.
Yeah.
It looks. Oh, that. Like if you end a bit laying on the floor, then you've got to get up and carry on. You've just lost everything. You lost all respect and what. It just.
Yeah.
I
totally agree.
Yeah, and it's like you're the. And even if you're low status, like my jokes, my bits are about being low status. Like I'm the butt of most of my jokes.
I think you can go down on your haunches rather than go down on
the
floor.
Yeah, but it's like, even if you're presenting yourself as low status on stage, why that's funny, why that works, is in that room, you have got the highest status. You're the one facing the opposite direction, under a light, holding a microphone. Now, you can say, oh, my wife, this, that, the other, this happened to me, or this awkward thing happened. And I think that discrepancy between you being the powerful one and you're on a platform and using it to sort of show your vulnerability is funny. But when you actually lay down, like physically, you've lost that. Just I don't know. It really jars when I see it.
Yeah, I wonder if it does for an audience.
When I'm watching, I am the audience, I guess. And I know.
Yeah, but you're analysing.
Yeah, I know. But
you're
very much analysing. I know we're probably analysing it, but I can. I think that's what it is. I think I can feel the audience go. Oh, is he laying down? That's a bit cringe. Do you know what I mean? Get up.
Yeah. But then I've seen people do it, like, again, like Terry, where the audience can't breathe for laughing and all he needs to do is lay down.
This is what I'm saying.
Go,
that's
oh
what
my
I'm
God,
saying.
That's the most incredible
Terry's,
thing
Terry's
I've ever
bit
seen.
Relays down is how could you have your feet talking to each other and the audience see it if you're not laying on your back with your legs in the air?
No, but I mean just anything.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. I'm giving similar advice. Whereas Terry said to you, you should have climbed over those chairs, and I'm saying you shouldn't. Like, yeah. I wouldn't say to Terry, you shouldn't lay on the floor, you lose status, because he doesn't. It all depends where you're starting from, what your persona is, and...
So is it luck as well? Because, like, I honestly think that I've basically told people that I'm good enough to be where I am. Like, I don't know whether I've moved up a ladder because that people at clubs have gone, he's good, I'll book him, or whether I've just gone... Yeah, well, I won't do that. So, and I'm just telling them where I should be. No one's singing, no one's blowing my trumpet other than me.
You're a big man. You must be more flexible than you look. I think that is a close cousin of imposter syndrome. When you question, have I gone up the bill because I'm getting better? Or is it just because, like, I'm getting better at blagging? And that's, of course you're getting better.
I don't even think I'm
no,
blagging.
No, I'm not blagging, but that kind of... Am I starting to give off more of an air of authority?
Yes.
No, but that,
yes.
I think that's a close relation to imposter syndrome, where of course we're getting better. I've been going 10 years now. How could I not have got better? And like I said...
Oh, well, I've seen people who haven't, mate.
Yeah, I know, they're not closing shows. But I see some people that are terrible... but definitely have that given off an air of authority, and especially when I get applications for them to do my gigs. And like I said, like we said last week, it happens a lot where you see someone's online presence and they've emailed me for spots and they've sent me a CV, if you like, and telling them I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And then you actually see them, you're like, my God, you're utter shit.
I think so many people are shit.
Yeah, I do too, which is personal preference. But I'm talking people that don't look comfortable. And here's another thing. About that laying on the floor that just occurred to me. Like, you might get a comedian on stage, say they're wearing black jeans, and they lay on the floor and they stand up and, like, their thigh's got a big, massive dust patch on it from the stage of their set. And you've gone, mate. I'm just looking at that dust going, you look like a cunt.
Do you remember when you had lipstick on your head?
No.
Someone before you had smeared lipstick all around their face. And
on the microphone. And I was touching my chin with the microphone. And when I got off and looked in the mirror, I had a big red lipstick mark on the middle of my chin.
But you thought you'd cut yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the audience thought I had.
Because it was a blob of lipstick that had smeared all over your face.
Yeah, and she was throwing around raw chickens. So when I came off, I was like, is you not worried about giving people salmonella? So, well, it's never happened. I was like, you're grabbing hold of raw chickens and then the microphone, and then people are holding the microphone to their mouth.
And I don't want that.
Well, no, exactly. I didn't even think of that, mate. How would a vegan or a vegetarian, even a vegetarian, react to that?
I would say, that's disgusting. Can I have some sort of wet wipe, please?
Yeah.
And I'd try and make that amusing. But inside, I'd be actually annoyed.
I think that is a bit too much to the lipstick, whatever. But the raw chicken, juice, germs.
The lipstick shouldn't be going on the microphone.
No, it shouldn't, but you know, whatever. I ain't got nothing against the bit.
Do you ever tell people off for putting their feet on the stage?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me angry.
I've said, like,
I'd go into
10
a rant
fucking
about,
years to get yeah, up here, yeah, and you've just walked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I do that.
Sorry, say again.
I do that. That's what I do.
What about if someone walks across the stage because it's short to get to the toilet?
God.
Get off my stage.
I had it once where the guy then patted me on the back as he walked across the stage.
That's just someone trying to be uber cocky and alpha, isn't it? Oh, fucking sure, mate.
Imagine that. I was like, what is he thinking?
So here's a funny thing. Did a gig on Saturday. Was in the toilet in the interval. This Welsh bloke goes, I wasn't on first. I've got to add. Welsh guy next to me at the arena goes, did you think that bloke was funny about the first act? I went, he didn't know I was an act, obviously. I went, yeah, pretty good. He went, if the next bloke's, I was in the middle. He goes, if the next bloke isn't any better, I'm going home. And I went, I don't think he is. And then he goes, you should come to Cardiff. Oh, they go hard there. None of this wishy-washy stuff. Oh, they go hard. So when I left, the club in the second interval. He was outside having a cigarette. He wasn't going home, Ash. That's all I'm going to say. That's as good as a five star. That's as good as a five star review to me. But it was funny.
Did you go hard?
There is that funny thing where someone talks to you, they don't know you're an act, and then you know that for the first 5 minutes you're on stage, you're probably thinking, oh, fuck, I've put my foot in it.
Have you ever overheard someone whilst you've been, like, because I'll often go for a stand-up or sit-down wee in the toilet, in the cubicle. So I'll go and sit.
The standard move of the micro-penised man.
Oh, God. Well, I'm not a... I don't suffer from stage fright in a urinal, but before a gig or after a gig, I will often go and sit.
Yeah. Did I tell you about the most embarrassing example of shy cock I've ever had? When I tried to be the biggest alpha dog of all time, and it backfired spectacularly.
Walked into the middle cube, into
worse,
the middle
way
urinal.
Worse, way worse, and it's shocking. And I don't know if I should tell you.
Pissed in the sink.
I was going to a gig. I think it was the Libertines at the Brixton Academy. And I went into the toilet before the show, and there was like a big trough urinal with absolutely people shoulder to shoulder and like 12 to 20 people in the queue waiting to go for a piss. And I was like, I bust in for a piss. And I just went, fuck this. I was hammered. I thought, I'm going to walk over and piss in the sink. And everyone in the queue.
No, you didn't.
So everyone in the queue looked over at me like, I went, ah, fuck it. And like, I got just, my bad bladder went from bursting to dried up, and I couldn't even squeeze out a drip. And I had to just, like, I had to tuck my penis back into my pants to walk out. I've never been more ashamed in my. I've never been more ashamed that A, that I thought I would do that, and B, I couldn't even do it. And I just watched the whole show, wanted to piss myself.
Oh, that's horrible.
I think people jeered as I walked out.
I wish you'd pissed. I honestly do. Like, I don't want you pissing in a sink because my son might have to wash his hands in that sink. But I wish you'd been able to, because that makes the story worse in terms of me feeling like.
Never mind someone next to you at a urinal that you feel is surreptitiously trying to size you up. I'm talking like that was in front of a grandstand of people staring at the back of me.
Yeah.
Bladder was like, you ain't shit, mate. You fucking, who do you think you are?
I'm the boss
get
here.
Get the fuck out of here, you disgusting animal. Like, my body turned on
were
me.
Were you on your tiptoes, or were you able to...
Well, no, I just lifted it up like a snorkel on a Land Rover. You know, just pulled it up and across like a periscope. Maybe it was that right angle I had to put in it that was the problem, but... Yeah. It was like a candy cane. I could have hung myself on a Christmas tree. Like, you know them blokes, blokes with a little pump water hanging baskets in the town?
I really wish you'd been able to piss.
Mate, like, haunted me for years.
Yeah.
Like, it was so long ago now, I don't care. But, I mean, at the time.
I care.
I couldn't have even told someone that story 10 years ago.
I think you should tell that story on stage.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, I went from brave cock to shy cock, like one extreme to the other. I mean, I stroke, oh, look, you fucking mugs, why don't you just do this? And then it just didn't happen.
I'm the boss. Everyone, look at me.
I was so exposed. It was like, when I knew it weren't coming.
Literally exposed.
Yeah, but you know, like, there's a point where you start thinking about it. Like, you're at the toilet and you're like, oh, it's not coming. And then you start like, just trying to internally, like, do Kegels and push it out with your pelvic floor or whatever it is. You're fucking...
No, it's not happening. It's not happening. Then, once you're not going, you're not going.
And once you start thinking about not going, it's like, you're never going to go. Like...
I don't suffer anymore because I go to football and I'm 40 now, so I always need to go as soon as I arrive at the football stadium. So I... But I have had it where I've had to, like, close my eyes, which I think is worse.
Yeah,
no. When you're busting,
no,
you've
got
to have
your wits about you, mate. You can't be stood there with your cock out and your eyes closed. You know what's going to happen.
Well, it seems to work where you just have to take yourself away or read the little... Often you'll have something to read now, won't you? There'll be an advert or something.
Here's a weird thing. Now, is this just me? Or do you feel a... Like, if you go to a urinal and the bloke next to you is mid-flow, you get your junk out, do your piss, and you finish before him. So he's pissing as you arrive and as you leave. Do you feel inferior?
I honestly think the length of time of a man's piss is status.
That's what I'm saying. So if I get next to a bloke and he's pissing when I turn up and then he's pissing when I leave, I feel like I feel ashamed of that. What the fuck's wrong with us?
Well, even that, let me micro analyze that even more. My son went for a piss the other day and I was like, well, I hope that ends soon.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that's going to stop soon.
Yeah.
He's still going. And I was like, and I wasn't even in the room, but I could hear it. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what's going on there?
Fuck, men are idiots. Do you think women are doing that in a cubicle, like, of a glass up against the wall?
No, I do not.
Actually...
So what's that then? Why is that? Why am I thinking my son? Why am I like, God, his bladder's got big?
Yeah, but that's youth. I'm talking about you get a bloke with like a just standing there doing a big old piss. He's just like,
yeah, but I'm saying I do think that. I totally do think that. But I've now even thought it about my 12-year-old son.
Once you get over 40, you will occasionally get this phenomenon, and it doesn't happen all the time, where it's like I'm absolutely busting, and then like a thimbleful just like drops out of the end.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that's a beautiful old, the prostate is a beautiful
thing.
Yeah,
it tricks you, starts playing games. It's like, you need a big old piss, and you go in there, it's like, no, not really.
And then when you get to 45, you have it bored out, and then you'll just have to wear nappies for a few months while your prostate repairs itself, and then you can piss normally again.
Why do older people, why is the prostate, why does it do that? I've got a theory.
Everything just falls apart, mate.
Yeah, but I've got a theory why specifically your prostate starts to do what it does.
Go on.
I think as you get older, your spunks are not as fertile and you're more likely to have problems with your offspring. And I think as an evolutionary thing, when your spunks have got like Zimmer frames and walking sticks and two tails and they're sort of like deformed up little spunks, your prostate's like, it's like a salesman that's lost faith in the product. It's like, yeah, just...
But, I mean, is that based on fact? Are a man's spunks, do they degrade?
Well, I know that when they talk about, like, when they screen you for your babies and talk about the chances of birth defects, I think the biggest contributing factor is the age of the father.
Oh, I thought it was the mother.
That was the myth. It's actually the father. And I think that evolutionary speaking, to keep the gene pool... well, that's the thing. Like in the past, before we paired off, we used to just have sex. Like a woman was ovulating, everyone in the tribe would have sex with her. Obviously, younger, virile spunks is better. So I think even your obviously, I think as you get older, your spunks swim slower. And this, but like also your prostate like doesn't pump them in there as deep because it's like, nah, you don't want this shit. This is not the good shit.
And your eyesight goes wrong, so you can't look at ladies.
And I think that's why your hair goes grey, to warn women that your spunks is going off. It's a visual thing. Like if you look at two blokes, you're like, it's like a best before date. Once your temples start going grey, it's like your spunk is. It's not. Yeah, best before date is the right way to say it. Because there's two, isn't there? There's used by date,
well
and there's
gone off.
You're sorry.
My best before date is definitely.
Oh yeah,
gone
definitely,
off.
Definitely. So A, you get grey and less attractive, and B, your prostate's like in the off chance that you do trick a woman into copulation, we are just going to not bury the seed as deep as the others.
Just let it slither out the end.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. And you just asked me, is that a fact?
As with all your facts,
no,
it makes sense
I
to
can't
you,
believe
so it's probably right.
You just said to me, is this actually a fact? And I'm like, have you ever spoken to me before? Of course it fucking isn't. What are you thinking?
Well, I enjoy it. I like your little theories.
Well, to me, that's what philosophy is. Philosophy is not saying you can prove. It's saying that it just sounds right. Like,
yeah, well, that is what philosophy is.
Well, philosophy is, that I said before, I think on it, philosophy is my most interesting sphere because it is a direct cross or a mixture of art and science, I guess.
And bollocks.
Well, yeah.
It's like a
but,
trifecta.
I mean, I'm talking about science, but in an artistic way. Not that it was particularly poetic, but I'm saying there is science involved in copulation and procreation and how it works. And then also applying like an artistic poetic. Do you think this is does that? Because it just seems when you can tie up the artistic and the scientific, it does feel like that's the sweet spot of philosophy. When someone says an
My
opinion
favorite.
That sounds like a fact.
Yes, well, that's what world leaders use to manipulate people, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
I like philosophy mainly so you can like put it on a little poster and put it in the kitchen.
Yeah. Like a silhouette of an eagle
that's shared on social media, and everyone goes, "Oh yeah, that's right."
I was in a toilet on the services at Birchhanger near Stansted on my way back from Bristol on Saturday, and I've got to say the standard of graffiti in the toilets has changed since I was a boy.
Better or worse?
Different. Like when I was a boy, it would be someone's number. And it would say like...
For hot cock.
Yeah, if you want a hot cock, that's like that sort of thing. Or just a drawing of a dick or a swastika or Chelsea, normally below the swastika. But I know you'd like that, you little gooner. But this one said something like, the strongest people aren't those that display strength. It's the ones that win battles you know nothing about. And I was like, the fuck? Why did you write that in a toilet cubicle? I don't understand. Bring back the drawings of dicks. What was that?
Yeah, but that's happening all over the place. There's so many people, and I'm guilty of it as well. There's so many people on Twitter and stuff telling people to live their life like it's the last moment. Like, I have done that.
One second, door.
What the fuck was that, listener? Like, of all the things you'd think Justin Panks would have as a doorbell, did anyone think it might be that little jaunty number? I imagined he'd have a doorbell, it wouldn't have any batteries in it, and it would just, they'd have to knock.
Did you hear that?
I mean, I heard your doorbell, mate. We all heard it.
That was here when I got it. But that was like Sid Vicious, the aggressive postman. He knocked like he was from the DEA and then rung the doorbell.
That doorbell was unacceptable.
That doorbell was here when I moved in, and I haven't done anything since I've moved in. It's only been 3 years. Give me a break. There's probably like one switch on it where I could change it to a different tune. I just never even looked at it.
You'd have like the, what's it called? I want to call it the Final March, but that's not what it's called.
That song is called Over the Waves.
Over the Waves.
I believe so.
But you'd have like the funeral march, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would have. I'll tell you what, I'd like the Skype tune. I love it every time I call you.
Do, do, do,
do, do, do. And you'd think, oh, it's exciting when Skype calls because I know it's me old tiddler.
No, you'd be able to Skype a doorbell before too long, wouldn't you? The way it's going, bloody technology.
Well, that's what, if you think about it, someone ringing your doorbell is the equivalent of the real world Skyping tune. And what I was just talking about, someone putting an inspirational message on a toilet cubicle, is like the real world Twitter. At the end of the day, Twitter is just people scrawling shit on the wall, isn't it? Literally shit.
Yeah, well, it's getting more and more that way, isn't it?
So anyway, going back to that, what is this fascination with, oh, I've seen something inspirational that resonates with me, I want to be the messenger and
but
pass
no
this on.
But no one lives their life to it. This is the thing that does my head in the most, and I'm guilty of sharing these things, but no one's living their life to these sort of mantras. It really fucking does my head in.
And I know this is probably a tired old hacky premise, but you know that live every day like it's your last?
Yeah.
I would, my life, if I knew today was my last day, I would just go around doing awful things. Because
I'd just curl up in a ball and cry.
No, I wouldn't. I'd like be committing murders. I mean, because you think that basically what you're saying is no recriminations, no consequences.
Yeah, you're gone tomorrow. Yeah.
Have at it.
Yeah. But you do that anyway.
To an extent.
You basically do live every day like it's your last.
Like I said, well, this year I've sort of every day I've wished was, but.
Yeah.
That doesn't do you any good, mate.
What, wishing that every day was your last?
This is why I think about it. You can think about jumping off a bridge, but until you're actually going to do it, just you might as well think about kittens.
Something else.
Yeah, think about something nice. Just go straight.
At what point should you actually start thinking about it then?
Like when you're climbing up onto the rail.
At that point is when it should first dawn on you about jumping off.
No, but that's when you should sort of like, you know, we've all spent
really
we've all spent 9 to 12 hours a day imagining the sensation of falling through the air, waiting for the ice cold water to knock you out and the sweet relief of death. We all spend 9 to 12 hours every day thinking about that. But until you stood on the railing, you might as well just think about something else.
How are you getting there not thinking about it?
I think that's another thing as well. I think the more you think about it, the less you're likely to do it. I think I've talked myself out of it too many times. I'm a bit disappointed in myself. I think it's a bit like trying to piss in a sink. You start thinking about it, it ain't going to happen. Just let it flow. go with the flow.
Your life is summed up by you trying to piss in a sink, really.
I think in many ways all of our lives is summed up by a man exercising extreme bravado that he can't back up, trying to piss in a stainless steel sink in front of 30 people wearing those little antique British Army red coats because they were watching the Libertines.
And on that, I think we leave it. Thank you, Justin, for another insight into your workings. Thank you, listener. Thank you for your support, as always. And we'll be putting this out again a little bit earlier for you patrons. You'll be listening to this a couple of days before the non-Patreon plebs. There are going to be some changes to the Patreonage. Hopefully to the benefit of the patrons. Justin, if they want to become patrons, what can they do?
They can listen to the information you were about to tell them and follow it. Because come on, it's been a while.
Go to patreon.com/pranksandfirth.
Pay what you owe.
You'll get extra podcasts, an extra podcast every month. You'll get video content and you'll get some stuff, stickers and, you know, depending on what level you're at, sometimes T-shirts and stuff. You can ask Mark Honeybuns about the old T-shirts.
The amazing T-shirt. And
got a couple of mugs left if people want mugs.
Who wants a mug then?
Who wants a mug then?
Mug is a word that comes back into fashion every 3 years.
We can't start this now, mate. I'm wrapping up.
All right.
Next week, we'll start with a mug chat.
We'll talk we'll talk about things that come round quickly. Like flared trousers seem to come around every 30 years.
But Christmas, every 6 months. Bizarre. Bizarre.
Yeah.
See ya.
Bye.